Can you hear the bells? Could you hear them? Yeah, just a little bit. Okay. All right. So, let's talk about some fun stuff. At least I find this stuff really fun. And so, what was that?
I'm back, just off video.
Oh, okay. All right. So, I mean, we could start anywhere, right? And so one way of doing this would be to say, okay, ask me a question and let's start from there. Another one would be for me to kind of start at some logical place and do my, a little progression. And so I'm just going to ask for, if you want to just ask questions and do it that way, or would you rather I started from point A and go to point B? So if you're up for, just close your eyes so you don't know what anybody else says. Just close your eyes. And if you want to do this more Socratic way, right, where you ask a question and it all flows from questions, raise your hand. And if you want to do the linear flow where we just, Karen starts somewhere and we go through, raise your hand. And if you don't care, raise your hand. Okay. All right. Then we're going to do we're pretty close, but we're going to edge on the Karen. I'm going to start at point A. That's where we're leaning just by a little. So if that's the case, let's talk about this yummy awareness that your thoughts create your world. Okay. Your thoughts create your world. And when we start to walk into that realm, meditation world has lived there for a long time. There's a whole movement out there. They're calling it the quantum universe, where the quantum physicists, the astrophysicists, where they really are the mathematicians living in this realm where everything starts as energy, and from vibration and energy, all of this manifests, right? And it's really very, very, very closely in sync with what the meditation teachings are. And most people know this from, you know, even back with Dale Carnegie, the power of positive thinking, or in the last 30, 40 years, what's been called like the new thought movement, right? Where we really start to pay attention to where our thoughts are doing, and we can change the course of our lives by changing our thoughts. Okay. So even the new thought world has its genesis in these yoga teachings. These teachings were brought to the West in the 1800s, I believe, by what are called the Transcendentalists. And they're people from Europe and the United States who went to India or Asia and studied these kinds of things and brought them back. And so what did they study? They learned this, maybe is one of the baseline teachings, is that there are three realms. There's the realm of physical matter, this earth, everything you can touch and see on this physical world. There's a subtle realm, which is the realm of thought, dreams, prana, the energy that runs through us. And there's the causal realm, which is the realm before thought, So there's three realms, and things exist as just things. That may not be the right word. Everything exists as a potential, just a potential in the causal realm. It's just a potential. There's nothing there. And this is where they say it's nothing and everything. It's emptiness that is everything at the same time. And from that pure potential place, as energy begins to move in that void, that potential emptiness, that movement creates a vibration which creates sound, and that moves, that's the genesis of the movement of the energy that becomes where potential moves into what we might call the realm of thought. And from thought, it becomes matter. So we call this process the precipitation of matter. It starts as pure potential. It moves into the subtle realm as a thought or a dream or a sensing. And then as it gets denser and denser, more energy is given it, more prana is given it, it takes form in the physical realm. And this is where this teaching that everything in this physical world is Maya, M-A-Y-A, an illusion. It's not real. I mean, you and I know it's real. As Kriyananda's guru used to say, because Kriyananda, you know, would ask the question we all ask, well, if it's not real, well, then I can do anything. And Shelley would say, well, you know, yeah, just try walking across the freeway at rush hour and see how real this realm is. It's real. You're going to get hit by a car, right? It's not like when we're in the physical world here, there are the rules of the physical world. This is a reality, but it is not the only reality. And so there is a reality we call the subtle realm. Lots of times we'll hear it called the astral realm. That's the realm of psychics and intuitives and all of us. We have that capacity to, okay, enough said, Karen. Okay. And then the causal realm. So causal, subtle, physical, and matter, the precipitation goes from causal to subtle to physical. It doesn't go the other way, which is important because once something has manifested in the physical realm, this cup, I can't change it. If I try to change it, I will need to melt it down, maybe. Maybe I should pick up this glass. That might be a better. So this is glass, right? If I try and change it, literally just move it around like this, I'll break it. It'll crack. If I want to reshape it, I need to melt it down and then reshape it. This is important because physical world, my thought, my family, my home, my job. I can paint my house, but if I'm looking for a different neighborhood, a different lifestyle, different kinds of neighbors, that might be a better way to put it, different kinds of neighbors, I need to change my thoughts, the samskaras, the energy that I am putting out into the world so that I can create a new reality in my physical world. And so to do that, I change my thinking. I melt down the glass and then I can reshape it into something else. I don't know if I did so stupid that with that explanation. Ask me a question about that because I'm not so sure I made that. I did that well.
It made perfect sense to me.
Well, you live in the quantum world, Kathleen.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was not new information to you. Yeah. No. Yeah. That's right up your alley. This is why I get excited. It's like, and I know these are up people's alleys. Like, yeah. Because it's affirmation. It's validation of everything you're learning, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've seen it happen in my real life. That's the other thing.
Ooh. Right. Would you be willing to share an example? Yeah.
Yes. So, yes. I mean, especially around the people and that I surround myself with now and the friends that I surround myself with. You know, my old habit of toxic relationships of, you know, all this drama, trauma. And over the past few years, you know, especially when I got sober, you know, just changing all of me, changing my behavior and all those types of friends, I should say, I don't know how else to explain this, that I've always wanted in my life are now here in my life. And it took a while for that to happen, but I had to like shed all of those things and then they appeared. It was, I'm not doing it justice, but it is quite beautiful.
I understood. Yeah. Did other people, are you following what Kathleen was saying there? Okay. All right. So any other questions on what this idea of precipitation of matter, causal to astral or subtle, I'll use the words interchangeably. I tend to stay away from astral because people start going, ooh, astral projection and, you know, let me talk to my dead mother and things like that. And it's like, I want to, that's limp. It's very limiting for what the subtle realms are. Ramon. Yeah.
What realm does the initial thought initiate? Like where does, you know, like she said, she changed the way she thought about, you know, what, she thought about what she wanted and then that manifested itself. But at what realm did that thought begin? Did it start at the causal and work its way down the physical, or does she physically
thought is an astral, subtle realm phenomena. Mm-hmm. The seeds of the potential, there will be some people who would say they're in the causal. Some people will say there's nothing like that in the causal. It is really truly pure potential. And I even asked Kriyananda the question once in a retreat because I was trying, but he gave different answers at different times. So on some really deep level, I don't know the answer. My experience tells me that in the causal realm, there is within that potential, and I'm not saying this is it, but it's almost like there's a, that's just waiting to become, right? But we're in the subtle realm when we're in with the thoughts, but they are so subtle. They can be so deep and so subtle that they're beyond a samskara. Like a samskara is a pattern, a deeply held pattern that we, depending on what you believe, have brought in with us. Or has been fed and strengthened in this physical life. My thought is that it's both. Cause like you just look at kids, you look at people, you look and you go, okay, you know, they came in like that, right? How many times have you said that? They came in that way. And so, yeah. Did that answer it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I kind of have a visual of like neurons and like that's the space at the potential and the receptors are individual people in the human experience, and it becomes an individual thought that can take many forms once it hits that receptor, right? It's mm-hmm. like just waiting, and then it attaches to, and now we have this thought. And so I think of the receptors like those places where the thought's taking place, but for jumping to that one path or the other, where you get the receiving end, like some are closer than others. So this is an easy path, but we have that space in which to make a different choice.
Yes.
And go that way.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, yes. Yes. April.
Is this where like, in the astrology class, I mean, I only took the first one, but he talked about like, you know, astrologically, like their proclivities. So it doesn't mean that it's like, it's destiny. It doesn't mean that we have, this is the, we came in to live this course out, but there are proclivities that like that neuroreceptor, they're really close together and it could easily just go there. And for most people, it takes lifetimes to get out of that, those patterns, or you have to work through those patterns. But this path is perhaps in my view, how, it's an opportunity to look at that, to look at it and say, oh, I'm going to make that conscious choice to not get hooked into that proclivity that I maybe came into the world with. And so anyway, that's how I'm looking at it. Is that?
Yeah. And I think it's really important to find a way to look at it. Mm-hmm. And as you find it, don't get locked into it. Mm-hmm. It's a tool that's helping you understand it right now. But what you are ultimately going to have is an experience. And that will give it to you, that understanding, in a way that isn't about words. You will experience it, right? And many of you already have. I mean, the fact that you and Lisa can even say this is because you've had an experience and you're going, oh, it's that there, right in there. That was my chance to hold another thought, to shift the thought, right? And so, yeah, absolutely. I think tools, finding ways to anchor this into your mind to help you think about these concepts and then integrate them, are valuable. And the tool that works for you is much, much better than something I might say. And as you share it, it may kind of click into place for other people too, you know? So Kelsey, yeah.
Okay, I have a question. So I'm going to put the question first and then explain my question.
Okay.
The question is, are we then like constantly interacting with the causal realm or almost never interacting with it? And the reason I'm asking is because when we're doing this work, like I'm just imagining it as like in this moment, who I am and what I am is like I'm in the physical realm. And when I go to do that work to melt myself down, that seems like it's in the subtle realm. Mm-hmm. So then my question is, like, when are we interacting with the causal realm? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Anybody got it? Anybody know the answer?
I would say the motivation to melt down in the first place would come from that one remnant that's always you throughout every lifetime, your Ishta, Devata, that place that says this is truth, and that causes you to have a thought and react.
That's lovely. And yes, and think about we have our physical body. We have the Ida and Pingala channels, nadis, right? Mm-hmm. That make the chakras. We'll talk about that in a few minutes if you have time. The Sushumna. Anytime you're touching the Sushumna, that's causal realm.
The meditation
that we always have access to.
We always have access to.
Yeah.
Always have access to. And I love how Lisa just said that. It's like that part of you that is, it's our hamsa. It's our little goose who always knows the way home and is always inside us, guiding us home. Every breath is that little piece of longing Lisa just mentioned that is bringing us home, guiding us home. Yeah. That's the best answer I can give at this point.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense. It's very comforting too.
Isn't it? So yeah, this is what I loved about Kriyananda's teachings was, every breath we pass from the Ida and we pass just that moment through the Sushumna into the Pingala, into the solar. And after that, we pass back, you know, we're at the bottom and then pass back into the Ida. I don't remember which class. Was this the Ripa class that I was talking about this? Okay. So just so I make sure everybody's on the same page here. You breathe in through the moon center. The energy flows down. And when it comes to the base of the spine, it passes through the Sushumna. It's just a moment, but it feeds it. And then you exhale and it comes out the sun center. But then what you want to keep in mind is it's your back, the sun center and the moon center are actually two poles of a chakra that's in the center of your head. And so even though you're exhaling this way, you're coming right back. You're in this chakra and moving through the Sushumna, even on the, after that exhale. And as you inhale again, you're back in the Ida. So on both poles of the breath, the top and the bottom of the breath, you will have a micro moment of time in the Sushumna. And Kriyananda's point was that eventually we are all destined to reach Sushumna consciousness because that's what the breath is. And over lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes of evolution, we will naturally evolve and find our way home. There is a point in the process where we become more conscious and more aware and we can consciously choose our way in and through to consciously soften and remove the samskaras, to consciously, which is what the techniques we learn with the breath to take us into the Sushumna so that we can, it's not about just getting into the Sushumna. It's about being, which is why the retreat is breathe. Let's learn a breathe technique. Let's learn the breathing techniques. Then once we found that, let's just let the breath reveal something to us. And what it reveals to us, can we just be with that? Can we just be? It's like we go from the breathing techniques, bring us into more awareness of the different levels and layers of our being and bring us into the Sushumna. From there, it opens up a realm. So as we just rest with the breath, we just rest with Hong Sa, we can experience Hong Sa in a different level. And when we release Hong Sa, because Hong Sa is just a tool, it's a technique, but it takes us home. And home is when we just be. We just be. So anyway. See, it's me who derails us. It's me who derails us. Okay. So any other questions or thoughts about precipitation of matter? April.
Well, I don't know if this is about precipitation of matter, and I'm not actually sure if I can articulate this to, but I'm trying to figure out where, because as you know, I struggle with the idea of the invocation and a prayer and those kinds of things, that thing. Because of, you know, kind of past religious trauma. And I'm trying to figure out, like, where that fits in here. Like, what, when the, this idea of prayer, where is that in this, in these realms? Is that, is it going from physical into subtle? Is it, where is that?
Yeah. Where does it fit in? It's going from physical into subtle. And I'm thinking, I think this, at one point, this helped me. I think they say prayer is talking to God. Meditation is listening to God. But I think that ultimately, let me choose my words very carefully here. Meditation is, it's a process, right? It's not a thing. Meditation is a process. We go from turning inward, pratyahara, and we move into concentration, and that brings us into meditation, which brings us into the sushumna awareness. Prayer is, and that's all of an interning that leads to a feeling of deep connection. Is that what everybody kind of, does that fit with what you might describe? April, does that description fit? Okay.
Yep.
Prayer traditionally is a out, looking out for something, right? Out there. However, the mystics, and you have maybe met, there are people from different religions. I don't even want to say Christian, because I know some Muslim who prayer is a, it's almost like a, another way of, if you repeat prayer again and again and again from the Kriyadaya, from the heart, right? And there is a, an absolute, in that kind of prayer, there is a total surrender and communion with whatever this else is. Those people know what you know. They know what we know when we get into sushumnic awareness. Prayer takes them, it's another technique that can take you there. But that, the prayer of the mystics is not the prayer of the everyday that we might know of. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, right? It's not the prayer of God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. It's not the prayer of Hail Mary, full of grace. It's not, oh God, please, please keep my uncle safe so that he doesn't die. Oh God, please keep my children safe. It's not that. It's a prayer of absolute devotion and love. Devotion and love, and wanting to be in communion with that force field. Is that a neutral enough word? And so maybe the distinction is that there is the kind of prayer we're taught, which is about asking, getting. It is a, as opposed to the prayer of the mystics, which is about merging. It's a devotion, devotional loving. Let me merge. Let me become part of you.
That word is good. Merging.
Merging.
Yeah.
Merging. Yeah. And so this actually, is this answering it, April?
It is. Thank you. Because I was struggling with trying to fit that in, because I'm always struggling with that.
Yeah.
Concept. Because my past experience was not even pray being like, you know, asking for help, or it was about denouncing yourself. It was about yourself being so nothing that you needed God to complete you, that you needed that reminder of how you are infinitely, you know, flawed.
Have pity on me. Oh, you know.
Yeah. And that if, yeah. And to ask for wisdom, but if you get the wisdom, you know, now you're just prideful. And like, I mean, it's just like, it was a constant state of being, shamed. Mm-hmm. And so it's a struggle for me to.
So let's just let that go.
Yeah.
That's a different level of consciousness. It's just a different level of consciousness. It's a level of consciousness that was created by men.
Yeah. Like right now, as I'm talking about it, I'm emotional. It's.
Yeah. Cause it's core.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's something very, very, and there's a bunch of us in here who are raised Catholic, and the Catholics are not that absolved from that. You take tiny little babies and you teach them that they are so flawed, that they were born with original sin, that there's something so fundamentally wrong with them that, oh, Laura, your doggy's so cute. No, I love listening to the little puppies. So fundamentally flawed with them that they don't deserve to be in the presence of whatever this beautiful thing called life is, right? And that there is a God. Try this one on. I mean, I'm sorry. And believe me, this is not about Jesus. Right. I love Jesus. Okay. This is not about Jesus. If you're a Jesus person, I am not denouncing Jesus. All I'm saying is, what kind of, excuse me, I should not even be recording this. Okay. What kind of twisted, sick mind puts a tortured man on a cross and says to a young child, God loves you so much, he did that to his son? That's fucked up.
Yeah.
That's just fucked up.
Yeah.
That is just plain fucked up.
Yeah.
Kathleen's laughing. Okay. But I mean, it is.
Yeah.
Let's just back up a minute and go. And this Kriyananda said this all the time. We have been seduced. Not all of us. Some of us were not. I was seduced by a construct that created a God made in the image of man with the anger, the jealousy of a human. And it was constructed with a limited knowledge.
Yeah.
Right? And because there is a part of us that wants to love, that wants to be in communion. As a child, you hear it and you go, okay. Okay. Oh my gosh. Jesus did this for me. Okay. Okay. You know, and.
Yeah, and it's I've been reckoning with that idea lately. I thought I was over all of this. I thought I'd worked through it all. I mean, like 20 years ago, you know. And what's come up recently is the idea of grace. To me, that is almost a toxic word, like because it is filled with that you will never. You can't work hard enough to please God. And in fact, no matter what you do, it's still not good enough. And only the grace of God will get you what you want. Like that was such a core teaching for the first 30 years of my life that like you can't actually work for it. So it doesn't matter who you are, or what you do, or how much you try, that God is still may not find you deserving. And it's like, you can't win.
You can't win. So what does that tell you? Is that a God? That's the way men think. And I don't mean just men. I mean, humans, that's human thought, human thinking. Mm-hmm. That's not, and this is where I'm just going to go back to Kriyananda, because I think I've shared with you that meditation he was teaching us and I was doing, and I was so terrified to go deep because all of that old God stuff came up, right? I wasn't worthy. It was something awful was going to happen. And he was so clear that God is good, that the word good is God. God is good. And there's a mystical teaching that I don't fully understand, so I'm reluctant to go into it, but I'll mention it because some of you may find it intriguing, that says that okay, let me see if I can put it out here clearly. I'm going to bring it back to the pattern of the breath. Okay. Cause with what we're learning, the Hamsa Meditation Center, right? The Hangsa technique, which is our technique, which is about the breath. There are four parts to the breath. Inhale, hold, exhale, hold. Four parts, right? Inhale, hold, exhale, hold. Pause if you'd rather. So two of them are the same. The holds are the same. So there's three distinct parts of this experience that brings us home. Does that make sense? That brings us home. So because of this patterning, his teaching was that the names for God actually have four letters, two of which are the same. Allah. Oh, what were the other ones? Good. G-O-O-D. Take out the O. You've got God. He had a list of them. Allah. I'm not remembering them. Agnieszka, do you remember them? Ramon, do either one of you remember any of this? I don't either. But he had examples of a few others that were the name. Oh, in the Jewish tradition, YHWH, Yahweh, right? The two W's are the same. And so this idea that God is not a person, it is an energy. It is an energy. And the energy of God is create, sustain, dissolve. Create, sustain, dissolve. I inhale, I create, I hold, I sustain, I exhale, I dissolve it all, and then I inhale again. And this is mirrored in the Om, the A-U-M, because it's actually A-U-M-M. So we're back to four that are three. A is creation. The U is the principle of sustain. The M is the dissolve, and that last M is silence. It's just emptiness. So this patterning, create, sustain, dissolve, and in both places, right, we create, the sustain is a hold. We dissolve, and then there's a hold. That's God. Or whatever word you want to use. That's life. That's it. And when we understand that principle, the breath takes us through to the causal, the sushumna. That process we just talked about is the pranic, the subtle realm at work. It's a process of creation from causal into subtle, into physical hold, dissolve back. I do not know if I did that justice. I do not know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Any questions on that?
Can I ask you maybe later? Because I think I derailed us a little bit.
No. This is all to be covered. It's like, this is in its own way, the most important piece of what we're covering. So no apologies. This is why I love questions. Yeah.
So I love what you just talked about. Like, I actually really love the idea. I kind of get into the idea of that, like the four letter. I mean, in the astrology class, he talked about that too.
Yes.
There's there's numbers and this, all this crazy stuff that it's like, it doesn't matter what, if it's a Western Christian religion or it's like, it's the similar, they're not even similar. It's like sameness in all of these is astounding. And I'm fascinated. I'm really fascinated by it, all of that. And so this part, the om and the breath, I've always said since the last couple of years, like the breath is like the metaphor of everything. Like it is, it can always go back to that. And here it is again, right? And that, but I'm just like, I feel like this is an area where I want a little bit deeper, some deeper work, like some more reading about just this stuff. And I don't know, maybe it's
in spiritual science.
Okay.
It's in there. Could I tell you which chapter? No, but that book,
mm-hmm.
all of this is in there.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Okay.
That's his gift to the planet is that book. There's nothing, if maybe very little of what I'm teaching you that is not in there. It's just really dense, yeah. And impenetrable in places. And so it's not a read from cover to cover. It's a kind of open it and go, oh, whoa, I don't know what he's talking about. Okay. Close it. Go somewhere else. Oh, okay. I can grasp that. And then 2 years later, you back and that what you couldn't understand, suddenly like, oh, makes total sense. You know, it's one of those kind of resources for you. Yeah. Any other thoughts or questions? Kelsey, yes.
It's a thought, not a question, but I just really love how this way of thinking, it's like we're always a part of it. We always have access to it. It's always within us and all around us. And that feels so much more real and all-encompassing, or like the way I understand us in the universe. So thank you.
Thank you. All my teachers, you know? Yeah. Yeah. Steve, how is this landing for you?
I think this is all actually landing very well. I mean, it definitely makes it, none of it is not making sense to me, put it that way. And I really appreciate all the questions others are asking.
So here's where I want to take a moment now. Steve had asked me the question, you know, there's all these different kinds of yoga. And I want to just make a point. So right now, what we're discussing now, these concepts of priority of causation, this concept, and it's not just a concept, this fundamental principle that from nothing, something is created and then it sustains itself for a while and then it dissolves back and then, right? That fundamental principle, recognizing that that is the pattern. There is nothing you're going to find unless you're totally in samadhi that is not that pattern. And even samadhi gently dissolves back into this, right? This is a place where wisdom comes. And so when we're studying these things, there's what we call the wisdom path, the jnana path, G-Y-A-N-A, or some will say J-Y-A-N-A, jnana. I don't know how to pronounce it. Jnana, jnana. How do you other yogis pronounce it? Not sure either, right?
I know. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. We're not Sanskrit. So at any rate, so let's just call it jnana because the latest teacher I'm studying with, that's how she pronounces it. Jnana. That's the path that Steve just resonates with. It's like, teach me these principles, Karen. Teach me this stuff. And we learn it and it's our path and that works for us, right? And there are other people that all that says, don't give me any of that intellectual stuff. I just want to do what we were talking about earlier. I want to just merge with the divine. I want to love the divine. That's the Rumi. That's the Kabir. That's that intoxicated with love for God. It's called bhakti yoga. B-H-A-K, bhakti. I don't know if there's an H-I or just an I. I think it's just an I. But B-H-A-K-T-I, bhakti yoga. And that's Yogananda. If those of you who are reading Autobiography of a Yogi, the important thing to understand here is Yogananda is a bhakti yogi. He loves with his heart and his being. And it's just there on every page. So for people who are not that devotional, it can be a bit of a to read it. But he's got a lot of wisdom and other kind of knowledge in there too, right? And then there's the karma yoga. These are the three main paths. The karma yoga, which is the yoga of action. It's like, okay, I got all those principles out there. Okay, yeah, I know. I love God. Yeah, no, you know what? I just want to get it there and do it. And karma yogis are the ones who go out there and, you know, and volunteer at the homeless shelters. Karma yogis are the ones who volunteer in the schools, who get out there and help start the nonprofits. You know, it's those of you who work with people who you're helping people, like Laura's work, the new yoga teachers, Kathleen, who works with her clients for healing, Kelsey, social work. I mean, you are karma yogis. I'm not defining it. I'm saying, but that is, you are doing it. Moms are definitely karma yogis, let's say, right? You're out there doing it, right? Now, there's also something called Raja yoga, which is called the royal path, which is where all of this comes together. All of these come together. And Raja yoga is what the Yoga Sutras, Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, is from. And so what we might say we love about Patanjali is that it feeds the Steves who want, I want to know it, right? That's my path. The Geminis of the world, give me the knowledge, right? It feeds the Scorpios, the Pisces, the Cancers, those of us who just want to love God. I just want to love God. You know, I want to love life. Our devotional, it feeds us and it feeds those of you who want to just get out there and do it. I want to help. I want to be of service to life. It feeds all of us. All of these paths work. All of these paths get us there. You can get to New York City by crossing the ocean. You can get to New York City by flying through the sky. You can get to New York City by driving along the earth or walking along the earth. You're going to get to New York City. So what is your path? That's what this is all about. What's your path? Let's help you do it your way. Let's find your way. And your way is in here. It's in here. And then those samskaras that April and Lisa and I'm going to say those of us Catholics have, you know, there's this helps to dissolve them. When you find your path and you recognize, oh my gosh, there's these other people who've thought this. Other people know this. this is out there. I'm not alone. It helps you to, it's like the light shines and you realize, oh, there's another way and you can follow and the rest of it drops away, but it doesn't drop away with hate. And, what is the word when you, rejection, it drops away with recognition and compassion. And actually, to be honest with you, gratitude. Gratitude for what it's taught you. Gratitude for what it's taught you. So. I love this shit. I just love this shit. Oh, God. Okay. So, what other, we got like 10 minutes. Do, yeah, Ramon, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want to go down this path because I know it's kind of, this is specifically for me, but, as my mind works, like, how do you, can you give me an example of a thought originating in the subtle realm, going up to the causal, coming back down, and then manifesting itself in the physical?
Okay, that's a good question, and that's not how it works.
Okay.
The causal, it doesn't go from, it goes causal to subtle to physical, and hold on. Let me make sure that I said what I said is just true. You asked me if thought goes from subtle up to causal and then to physical. Is that what you asked me?
No, I'm just trying to say like I have a thought of, I want to change this in my life. So
okay.
Where does that thought, what does that original thought originate and where does it ascend to? And then how does it come down to the physical?
That thought. Okay. Hang with me here.
Mm-hmm.
That thought. Believe it or not, is a karmic propensity that you embedded in your karmic patterning before you incarnated. And the timing for that thought showed up and that thought came. The thought came. So when you incarnated, that thought came in, because that's a deeply held thought. I want to change this in my life. Subtle realm thought. Subtle realm dreaming, daydreaming. You have enough of those thoughts and hear this. So that you can be so, so gentle when you're with yourself, when it doesn't happen right away. You have the thought and then you don't do it. You have the thought and then you don't do it. You have the thought and then you don't do it. It's like it takes time for that thought to build up enough mass, enough energy to become the action where you go buy the sneakers so that you can start training for your marathon. Following me? So that you actually, maybe the first thing you do is you make a list of a schedule. Oh, here, I could do it here. You start adding it to your to-do list. Gives it more energy. Gives it more, you're feeding it. Well, it doesn't get done on your to-do list if you're like me for years, right? But still shows up on your to-do list. I don't give up, right?
Is that part of putting the list together, is that part of the physical realm?
Yes, that's thought. That's part of it coming into the physical. That's part, it's feeding it.
Okay.
And this is what is so derailing for many of us is we think that because we're in this culture, right? It's do, and we don't understand these things, and we're so judgmental on ourselves that I have a thought, I want to walk 3 times a week, and then, or work out 3 times a week, whatever it is, and then I don't. And we feel like failures. And it's like, no, I have a thought. This is a new thought. I have a deeply held samskara that I hate walking. I'm just talking personally, right? I hate it. I don't enjoy it. There's nothing about it I like. And so I need to walk 3 times a week. I need to walk 3 times a week. Okay. Eventually gets on my list. That's starting to feed it. But I am working against deeply held. I hate exercising for no reason. I just fucking hate it. Dance on the dance floor? Absolutely. Hike? Absolutely. But because I have to? Fuck. Right? So I've got to come up with enough weight and mass to equal the power of that samskara that is deeply embedded in my being. So writing it down, making a schedule. How many, I don't know about you guys, but I made so many schedules that they're just beautiful. They're color coded and everything. And I don't do them, you know, or maybe I do it once, right? But little by little by little, little by little by little, we get there. I'm still not walking 3 times a week. Let's be clear. That sun scar is really hard. That's really well held in there, you know. So I may have to save that one for another life. But did that answer it, Ramon?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So let me show you this. That we haven't covered everything on the handout, so it's going to be a little confusing. But let me make sure, which one do I have? I want to show you this one. No, this one. So I'm going to share my screen right now, and I'm going to show you this little handout that, oops, what did I share anything? I can't tell what I shared. Hold on. I meant to share this.
It looked like frisbee golf.
Yes. So this, Darcy, I think I sent this to you in your email, and Darcy will get this up tomorrow. But the main thing to start to, just as you observe this, there's a ton of information in here, but there's a super subtle, which is called the causal realm, which is at the top, which we are going to place at we're putting it here, but it's really at this chakric level, but it's really the sushumna. Okay. Sushumna. And then the subtle realm is associated with the throat and the heart chakras. And the physical realm is associated with the what I'm calling here, the Mars, Jupiter, Saturn chakras. Now, I've given you another worksheet that has the names of all the, is it on here? Yeah. Hold on. It actually has the names of the chakras and the elements. And so we're working between various systems here, but for our purposes, what we're talking about, precipitation of matter, traditionally the chakras are, come on, change, are associated with the lower chakras, the navel, the, what we would call the water chakra, which is at your sacrum, and the earth chakra, which is at the base of your tailbone. That's the physical world. This is what we are. This is the realm of the intense karmas that we are experiencing in our life that have to deal with our relationships, our jobs, our homes, the earth. When we move up into the karma of the heart center and the throat center, the air and the ether, that's the subtle, more subtle karma. That's the emotions. That's the thoughts. And that is the good news, is that's some of the hardest karma you're going to have to balance. That what April was talking about and what Lisa has experienced, when you've experienced that level of trauma from religion, those are deeply, deeply held thought patterns. The good news is, there is, you, by changing your thoughts, changing your perceptions, April asking those questions to find another way to look at these things, to change your thinking around it. You can change those. They're deep, but you can change them. It's internal to you. It doesn't involve, when we talk about the lower chakras, literally, you know, leaving a job, families breaking up, you know, death and birth. It's like some of the physical, of the karma of this physical world is harder to deal with, and it's harder to change because it involves other people. We can't change other people, but any karma that's internal to you, the good news is it's easier for you to change. That may have not been relevant. Karen, shush. Okay. Anyway, we're going to talk a lot more about this over the next few weeks. It's actually so fun. And with that, we're done. We have 10 seconds. So. So let's just do an Om Shanti together, and we will be thinking of you next week, Steve, as you're running, and I'll see most of you, I think, either the anxiety class or not. Those of you who weren't there yesterday, I decided to hold another class next Saturday because there's so much material and it's so rich, and we're having a little more interactiveness. So I'm just adding a class for next Saturday if anybody wants to. And so we'll do that. All right, loves. Let's do an Om Shanti, and then our may we be blessed. Okay. All right. So find your seat. Take a moment to just step into the heart, to just move into that heart center with that sense of perhaps just opening to each other, to this beautiful circle, the Sangha, made of such incredible souls with such different paths, but such richness and depth to share. And as you hold each other in this circle, let's do what we're practicing in group, right? Om, feel the vibration in you. Shanti, feel the peace, the connection in you. Second Shanti, send it to each other. Full-hearted, send it to each other. And then with the third Shanti, you repeat that sending, but this time you are aware. Aware. It's a subtle sensation. See if you can feel the vibration of those Shantis from everybody else coming towards you. Okay? Here we go. Inhale. Om. Shanti. 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 If you want to unmute for this part, feel free. As we say together, may we be blessed. May we be blessed. And may we be triply blessed, that we may be an even greater blessing to others. Namaste, beautiful ones. Namaste. Namaste. All right. Go forth. Be blessings. All right. Love you guys. I'll see you, some of you, tomorrow. All righty. Bye-bye.